Let's give a roaring welcome for the one and only W. Kamau Bell.
Yeah! Welcome to Kamau right now. Here on KALW. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the second season of Kamau Right Now. We made it out of 2016. I'm so happy because I'm kind of a celebrity. I'm happy I didn't die. And now I'm not that big a celebrity, yes. And now we're here to give 2017 a chance, and we're broadcasting live from KALW here at Odell Johnson Theater at Laney College in beautiful Oakland, California! It feels appropriate to be at this place of higher learning because tomorrow on January 20th, so many people are going to be high. Woo! Amen. That's right. Especially now that it's legal. Hey! Give it up for the band Conbrio, everybody. Conbrio! For people in the audience, it's funny that I said give it up for the band because they went away. Tonight, we're going to do what we do. We're going to get into some conversations, get into everything that's happening right now, or we may just take a break and remember the good old days of October 2016. But we have awesome guests tonight. We have the great panel we have. One of my guests is the co-host of the podcast, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, and she was on NPR's Fresh Air yesterday. My good friend Zara Norbosch. Everybody give her Zara. From UC Berkeley, we have the law professor and expert on dog whistle politics, which we should have paid more attention to. Give it up for Professor Ian Haney Lopez, everybody. And rounding out the panel is an activist and the national director of the Live Free campaign and the lead pastor of the Way Church in Berkeley. My pastor, even though I don't go to his church, but he's my pastor. I don't go to any church. It's no offense to him. I need to go to church. We all need more Jesus or whatever our own version of that is. For some of you, it's kale. Whatever it is. Give it up for Pastor Michael McBride, everybody. He'll be out here later. feel like there's some Pastor McBride ringers in the crowd, sounds like. Yes. And later we will talk to two people. There's a very big story that has been all around the country that comes out of the city of Oakland. And we're going to talk to two people who are involved in the artist space in Oakland known as Ghost Ship. As most of us know, Ghost Ship was destroyed by a fire on December 2nd, 2016. 36 people were killed. We're going to talk to these two to find out what has happened since, what we can do to help the families, friends, and artists, and what it means to our greater community. Give it up for them for coming out tonight. And a portion of tonight's proceeds will go towards relief organizations for the communities affected by the Oakland Ghost Ship Fire. We're tweeting out a couple of them, recommended by our guests who are going to be on the show later. We're encouraging everyone to take a second and make a contribution to these communities. We have links as well at kalw.org, where you can see the Kamau Right Now page right at the front. And since this is Kamau Right Now, we want to know what's going on with you right now, here in the audience, right here in the Odell Johnson Theater. Those of you out there listening on the radio or out there on Twitter, maybe you have a question for one of our guests tonight. Maybe, you know, let us know something awesome that happened to you in 2016. If, you know, just to dispel that narrative, we got to change narratives. Just tweet us at Kamau Right Now using the hashtag Kamau Now. And let's see. In fact, let's introduce our social media team right now who will be carefully sorting through all your posts and tweets. Please give it up for Becca Hoekstra and Maya Janelle.
Hello. Hi again. Hey, Kamau.
Becca, can you give us a taste of what people are tweeting our way so far?
Yeah, we have this good example so far. I've been trying to get people to tell me good things that have happened this year or good things they're going to do this year. So I got this one from at Amy Amazon. My 15-year-old daughter said, "Don't worry, Mom. My generation will get them out next time. My job is done for this year."
Yeah, give it up for 15-year-olds who have hope. And Maya, I heard a rumor that for you, 2016, which was famously thought to be the worst year in the history of the planet, that it wasn't such a bad year for you, that you sort of had a good 2016.
I did. It was a pretty banner year. I saw...
Don't be shy about it now.
I'm not. I'll let you guys know. I saw the original Broadway cast of Hamilton.
Oh.
Yeah. Lin-Manuel Miranda's final performance.
You went to the final performance of Lin-Manuel Miranda in Hamilton?
Yes.
Can I touch you? I feel like that's like it's like those religious sculptures.
Oh, look, it's me.
Oh, that's you on Twitter. That's right.
On Twitter. I saw Prince in February.
Oh, my God, yeah,
his Oakland show.
That was here at the Paramount in Oakland.
Yeah, that was at the Paramount. I also saw Dave Chappelle last month here in San Francisco.
It's funny, in the Bay Area, like one out of one person has seen Dave Chappelle at some point. That's good. I love you, Dave. You're here quite often. taking tickets away from my sales often. Why did nobody show up tonight? Oh, Dave Chappelle is doing the Oracle Arena, yes.
So those were some highlights.
Those are good. And also, you got a job on the show last year, right?
I did. I sent a tweet from the audience a couple months back and was hired straight from the audience. So shoot your shot, 27.
Get up for Maya and Beck, everybody. Shoot your shot. That's what we should learn about the next. Shoot your shot. For those who don't tweet, we have a guy in a skinny tie roaming the theater, passing out and collecting audience cards. Please don't ignore him. That's our audience emissary, Jeremy Dalmas, everybody. Jeremy Dalmas.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Kamau.
Jeremy, we want to keep the positivity going because we're going to talk about a lot of things tonight that are difficult. Do you have anything positive for us right now?
Well, we got this one card from Melanie in Albany. She said, the herring were running in SF Bay right where I work, so I got to watch sea lions frolicking and fighting all day long.
She watched sea lions frolicking and fighting all day long.
Frolicking and fighting.
Frolicking sounds good. Fighting, they...
I know. I mean, maybe it's a little too, close to what's actually happening.
Republican and Democratic sea lions trying to figure it out, too.
But nature, even though it can be scary, it's also beautiful.
Thank you for that little... This is like a fortune cookie. Thank you for that. Jeremy Dalmas, everybody. We'll talk to him later on the show. And now it's my turn to talk. Oh, everybody, I don't know what to do, everybody. I'm like a lot of you. I'm just experiencing life, putting one foot in front of the other. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this right now, I feel like it's that, whenever you see a movie about a post-apocalyptic era of America, they never show you the day before. I feel like that may be today. You know what I mean? You never see the day before Mad Max. It's always just already happening, And I find myself, I don't know if anybody else is like this, it's hard for me to pay attention to things I used to care about. Like, sort of silly, like, not silly things, but things I used to be into. Like, are the Warriors playing this season? I'm not really sure. I haven't paid attention. Are they doing well? I keep trying to pay attention, and I'm just like, I just can't take it in. People are like, the Warriors are winning. I was like, unless it's the election, I don't really care. It's too much for me. But we are stepping into the era. We're at the eve, the last few hours before the Trump era begins as the president of this country. I'm not breaking news, right? You guys knew that before you showed up? We have to get over the we have to move into the we gotta get over Bay Area sad face. We gotta get into like middle of the country angry face. That's what we gotta get to. I mean, we gotta admit, who knows how this is gonna work out, because it's already things I never thought I'd see before. Donald Trump is the only person in the history of this country to get the CIA, FBI, and black people mad at him at the same time. It's like, normally those groups are on different sides, but right now, we got to pay attention to that. And also, I have a little hope. My wife was all hoping that the electors would flip, that the electors would flip over. Yeah, but that didn't happen. I moved past that. I'm all about that hashtag Cal exit. I don't know what you guys are thinking about that. I'm all about hey. Some of you are like, that's from the Russians' idea. I don't care. I'll take a good idea from a bad source at this point. I'd rather that than a bad idea from a good source, all right? So I'll take it. I'll take it. Think about it. California is the sixth largest economy in the world. That was before legalized marijuana. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're going to be fine, everybody. We're going to be fine. Every drop of rain, the drought gets less and less effective. It's so great. We're like, Colorado, keep your water. We're going to be all right. And if we do need water, it's no big deal. It's no big deal. If we do need something, we have leverage. If the country's like, we're not giving you water. Really? Do you like movies? I do like movies. Then send the water. I just feel like we could stay in California. We could, broker a new deal. We could, have an open border policy with Canada and Mexico. You see what I'm saying? That's right. Canada, we get that free health care. Mexico, we get the prescription drugs over the counter. It's the same thing. It all comes together. I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, so we have to talk about this stuff, and we also have to realize that we're not just focusing on we have to stop. It's not all focused on DC and Trump. There's also a lot of stuff going on locally that we got to pay attention to too, right? Yeah, it's not just all. That's the thing we have to realize. We got to, if we focus on that local stuff, work our way up to there's a lot of stuff happening here in the Bay Area, and tonight we're going to talk about some of that before we get started in a new segment I'm calling "Pull My Coat." Because I think that's the thing with the election. A lot of us didn't have our coats pulled about enough things. And so we're going to tonight do a short interview up front with some people who need to tell us about what's going on here in the Bay Area. So on Monday, more than 10,000 people mobilized in marches and teach-ins around the Bay as part of the Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And in Oakland, those mobilizations were part of the larger anti-police terror project. APTP called for 120 hours of direct action, beginning with the hashtag ReclaimMLK on January 16th and ending on January 20th with what they're calling the hashtag Hellnauguration events. We have two of the co-founders of the Anti-Police Terror Project in the audience. They're coming up on stage tonight. Please welcome Kat Brooks and Turha Ok, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. So we're going to talk to you later when we do the after party, but we want to make sure people on the radio hear what's going on. So please, tell us what is going on.
Sure, so for the third year in a row, Anti-Police Terror Project called for the reclaiming of King's radical legacy, and that's a march that happens in the streets of Oakland. We brought in 5,000 people, took to the streets, and we called for 120 hours of direct action that started with Monday, Reclaim King, and going all the way to Friday, Hellnauguration, shut down sit-ins, vigils, political things. Tomorrow is going to be a pretty crazy day in the Bay Area.
Oh, we're going old school. I love it.
You know how we do.
I know how we do. That's right. And also, I think people need to know, why is this important? Because there's people at home going, is that what? There's always this talk about, does that change anything? Why is this important? He said, as he was off mic, he's like, wow, is that really your question, brother? I'm trying to ask the dumb question, sir, please.
I mean, it's a good question, though, because people actually, that's something we hear all the time. Does it impact anything, being in the streets? It does. It sends a message that, first of all, of solidarity. It sends a message to the predatory elements that we are standing together. Now, is that the only step? No, it needs to be the first step. But it is an important first step, because what we see often when people are out on the streets, it's their first engagement with anything political in that sense. So it is a good space to hold, but it cannot be the only step.
And that's where we grab our people to build our movement, right? So they're angry. They want to do something that gives them a chance, especially right now, right? People are angry, yes. And they want to do something, and they're sad. And so the protest is not the be-all, end-all. It is a means to a larger end of building a movement for radical resistance in this country, which we are going to need for the next 4 years.
Thank you. And what can people hear and listen on the radio, what can we do to help this out, to help move this along?
You can get in the streets tomorrow.
All right.
And beyond tomorrow. You can go to antipoliceterrorproject.org, and yes. You can join our mailing list. You can come to our meetings. If you don't jive with our organization, you can find another organization. If you don't find an organization which in the Bay Area is like, come on now. But, you know, if you're just really not feeling any of the 5,000
like
million organizations out here,
Whole Foods.
That
what
part, start an organization, right? But get busy, get off the couch. Sharing, liking, posts on Facebook is not going to get us free. Get busy, please.
We will have you back later to talk in the show. Give it up for Kat Brooks and Turha Ok, everybody. Thank you. And also shout out to Nancy Armstrong Temple, who always texts me the day before the show to tell me, here's what you're putting on the show. She's responsible for them being here. Give it up for Nancy Armstrong Temple, everybody. We've got some more amazing guests to come out and do the rap session with us to help us talk about what's going on in the world right now. My first guest is a professor of law at UC Berkeley. He's one of the nation's leading thinkers on how racism has evolved in the United States. His latest book, Dog Whistle Politics, How Coded Racial Appeals Have Reinvented Racism and Wrecked the Middle Class, was clearly not read by enough people. He was also the first guest on my other podcast, Politically Reactive. Please welcome Professor Ian Haney-Lopez, everybody. M- My next guest is making her second appearance here on Come Out right now. She is co-host of the Oprah Magazine approved podcast, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. If Oprah likes it, so you know, that's how we know. She can be heard on yesterday's episode of Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and her new show on behalf of all, her new solo show on behalf of all Muslims debuts February 2nd at the Islamic Center of Northern California here in Oakland. Please welcome my good friend. I'm so proud of her, Zahra Norbosch, everybody. My last guest is the National Director of the Live Free Campaign and Urban Strategies Division of the PICO National Network. He's also lead pastor of the Way Church in Berkeley, California. Earlier this week, he was part of the event MLK Now put on by Blackout for Human Rights. We are honored to welcome Pastor Michael McBride, everybody. Pastor Michael McBride. Pastor McBride, you brought your people with you, didn't you? Your followers have followed you.
It helps to have a church.
You've actually got real followers. All of us on Twitter are like, I got followers. You actually have actual followers who followed you here tonight.
Well, hold on a minute. I'm here representing 1.7 billion people.
Oh, that's right, Zahra. You are on behalf of all Muslims.
Yeah. You must have a big building. You must have.
I do it all from Twitter, actually. Oh. I learned from a guy.
Hope they tithe.
Does Jack tithe? Subject for another day.
I can't top that.
So in this show, we always like to find out what's going on with everybody right now. There's obvious subjects that are going on right now, but feel free to take this question however you want to. I'll start with you, Professor Ian. I want to call you Professor Ian because it makes me feel like I'm in college. So you wrote a book called Dog Whistle Politics. Is your next book going to be called Why Didn't You Read My Last Book, America?
My next book will be called Donald Trump, Why Didn't You Pay Me Royalties? You ripped off all the ideas.
Oh.
So it was a book that was a critique about the use of race in American politics, and the guy read it as a how-to manual.
Wow.
I mean, what's up with that?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you were on my other podcast, and you talked about how just the way in which the people in this country, I don't want to say the right, I feel like we have to get rid of those old ways of thinking about this country, that people have used racism as a way, coded way, so that people who like to think of themselves as not being racist can then sort of go, oh, I can vote for this person. There's lots of people, as you talked about, who voted for Donald Trump who go, he's not racist, so I can vote for him.
I think that's right. I think that when we think about this election was all about race. And
wait,
yeah.
Hold on, though. I just want to say, like, Muslims.
Wait. Did you call me Professor Ian?
Yes, I did.
What happened to the prerogatives of professors here?
You mean liberal propaganda?
That's what we do.
There's the whole thing about like racism and it not being real. I mean, I don't know, because there's like the Muslim planet.
The what?
The Islam is a race now.
Oh. Islam got transmogrified into a race now.
And if we dismantle that, then I don't have 1.7 billion followers.
Oh, okay.
So it's working out for you.
We have a stake in our own oppression.
I just really wanted to get my joke in.
Oh.
Well, Zahra, we'll move on to you so you can get more of your jokes in. But also, I've heard you started in, people make New Year's resolutions, and you have discovered a new workout method. Is that true?
Yes, I'm working on my KGB body. I've been watching The Hunger Games. I realize I have 10 hours. I don't really do math, so I don't actually know if I have that long. But yeah, I'm Catherine Zeta-Jonesing it. You know, like the red yarn, 90s babies. Anybody? Slinking her body through. I'm doing it. I'm working on my bar method strategy. And just ready to resist and ready to run.
Ready to run. So it's both resistance and also in case I need to get the hell out of here.
That's all I'm saying. All right.
So the bar method. What is that? The one that's like the ballet bar?
I'll specify when they tithe.
The bar to drink?
Oh, the bar method, yes.
The bar method?
I have a feeling a lot of people will be practicing that bar method tomorrow, yes. At the bar tithing.
Maybe on Sunday.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, Pastor McBride, we were trying to get in touch with you for the last couple of days so that you could tell us what your right now was, and you didn't give us your right now. And first we thought, he's usually so cool and so opening and so willing to talk to us. What's happened? But can you tell us why you weren't in contact with this show?
Well, the D.C. jail wouldn't give me my phone call, and turns out that on Monday we were throwing our MLK event and had a lot of great activists and celebrities there at the Riverside Church. I caught a 4 a.m. train to head down to be with some friends who were protesting the death penalty, and they arrested us and threw us in the bottom of the D.C. jail with every roach and bug that you could imagine crawling up and down our walls and in our bed. And you were the last thing on my mind. I'm sorry.
Totally fair.
So I
totally fair.
Couldn't return the phone call, but I was glad to get out of hell and make it back home. But it's been a interesting couple of days. Quite a fall from grace from being with Olivia Wilde and the next day with the king of the roach motel, but glad to survive.
And, I mean, we were talking about this before. I just want to highlight the fact that you have, for civil disobedience and civil action, you've been arrested before.
Yeah, you can't avoid that hanging out with people like Kat Brooks and Turha. I mean, it's kind of part of the, it's kind of part of your initiation. You know, you get jumped into gangs, right,
yes,
in the hood, and then you go to jail with Kat and Turha. No. it wasn't my first time being arrested, but it was my first time being terrorized while incarcerated. And I'll never forget it. I'm on my way to therapy next week to try to get my bearings back. Good to be here to laugh a little bit.
Yeah, no, I love the fact that the Bay Area clapped for therapy. I love that. People are like, self-care, self-care. If you just tuned in, I'm W. Kamau Bell, and I've been speaking with Professor Ian Haney-Lopez, Pastor Mike McBride, and Zara Norbosch. This is Kamau Right Now on KALW, live from Laney College. So there's really only one subject to talk about this evening. Some weeks I have surprise subjects I want to talk about, but there's only one thing, and I feel like the best way to get into it is with a tweet from this subject. This is a tweet from future President Donald Trump. It's right, you can look on the screen behind you. This is from yesterday. It says, writing my inaugural address at the Winter White House, Mar-a-Lago, 3 weeks ago, looking forward to Friday's hashtag inauguration. And for those of you who are following us on Twitter, we'll tweet this out, but you can also see the picture, I'll describe it, is of a man who's clearly not writing his inauguration. it's a man who's staring off into space. A little bit, he's got a look of like, what I done did, is the look I see on his face.
But I think it's actual shock that he won.
Yeah.
He's still shocked.
He's like, what? I want to toss it over to Becca and Maya because, Maya, you said Twitter had a field day with this picture.
Yeah. Twitter went in on that wax figure.
Yeah, he does look like Madame Tussauds. Yes.
Little bit. He looks kind of like a wax figure sitting there. But there was another tweet that zoomed in closely to show that he's holding a Sharpie, like, because that's how you write speeches, just a Sharpie and a legal pad. And he starts off by saying, Webster's defines a president as, no clue, he has no idea.
He's writing his inaugural address. According to Wikipedia, an inaugural address is...
Yeah, but that's better grammar than usual for him.
That's true.
He's stepping it up. He's raising his game now.
He's actually using the definition of words as they're defined by dictionaries. So that's that puts him ahead of the game right there.
Are we really going to continue lowering the expectations on white men here? Come on.
No, Trump's doing that for us.
Yes.
And here's the rest of that great.
So these are tweets sent in. This was from @JordanUHI. This is a tweet Jordan sent in.
He says, I have the best words. Insult CNN. Okay, so how about that Obama guy? Wait for booze. More like, oh, bummer. They laugh bigly. Okay, check out my new hotel.
You know he's going to mention his hotel.
It's fun to laugh before you cry.
On Doom's Eve.
Yes. Oh, look, and there we go. Yes. Yeah. Read that one, Maya.
Trying to put Madame Tussauds out of business, like, yeah. Just chilling.
We're almost hours before. Many people in the Bay Area want to be like, or in the country. A lot of people on the left want to be like, I don't want to take it in. I don't want to believe it. Hashtag not my president. But here we sit. He is going to be the president of the United States in just a few hours. So I want to ask everybody here, we'll start with you, Professor Ian, and what is your thing you're most worried about coming up, and what gives you the most hope?
So I'm gonna use a fancy term, symbolic annihilation. Symbolic annihilation. Trump's base wants him to destroy the things that they think threaten them, and that's the things that threaten whiteness, that threaten maleness, that threaten heterosexuality, that threaten Christianity. And he's got to deliver on those culture war fronts, because meanwhile, he's handing over the country to billionaires. And so what we're going to see is an intensification of the culture wars. It's going to be crackdowns on Muslims, mass deportations of Latinos, back to stop and frisk. There's going to be an effort to obliterate everything that Obama did, right or wrong, because it's associated with Obama. Right, that's what I worry about, the symbolic annihilation of all the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. And what if anything gives you hope about the next 4 to 8 years to infinity?
Well, give me a moment.
Okay, all
now,
right.
I'll tell you what gives me hope, and it is this phrase, which is not academic, it's just actually core to who we are. It is we the people. We the people. Because that America has always been a work in progress. It has always been something that we have to fight for, that each generation picks a new fight and expands who's included in we the people. And only by continuing that fight and coming together and saying we're not going to be divided by fears about race or about gender or about sexuality, only then can we throw that bum out and throw out the corporations and the Koch brothers and all the family dynastic wealth and get our country back. So it's we the people. That's what inspires me.
Absolutely. Zara, what about you? What are you most worried about and what inspires you?
Oh, man. I feel like it's going to be a good year for Muslims.
What regard?
Literally in absolutely no regard, but I heard a TED Talk tell me to think that way. And so I'm trying it. I am really worried about basically coded language. I'll say this. I'm most worried about the Persians that I know who have decided to pass for white.
Mm. Oh, I like that. Somebody said, ooh.
I would like to bring that to the table.
I consider it brought.
But you know what we might add? It's the white folks who are deciding to pass for white, too, right? Because that's who's voting for Trump. It's folks, some of them European, some of them Persian, some of them Latino, and some of them black, who are investing in whiteness, who are saying what's important to me is to feel superior to others on the basis of my blood and my skin color. And they're the major danger.
Well, I'm worried about the white folks who don't think that they're passing for white, but they really are. And that's the Bay Area white. Touch your neighbor somebody, right?
Yeah. That's gone there.
But some of them come to my church, and they're very wonderful getting transformed and
tithing.
They're great tithers, by the way. No, just like.
On time.
Oh, my. No, I think my greatest concern is that we will, it's not about Donald Trump. If we are all alive because he doesn't blow up the world 4 years from now. I'm worried that we will go back to the failed imagination of white progressives that actually helped contribute to us getting here in the first place. And so my greatest hope is the spirit-led, revolutionary, emerging generation of leaders who have the courage to look white supremacy, whiteness, and even some of our white loved ones in the face and tell them the jig is up and it's our turn, and follow or get out the way. And I think that that is going to be the key to our collective liberation. It won't be continuing to follow folks who can't seem to see the train coming, and they're driving us onto the tracks. So I hope that we can make room for that kind of leadership, and all of us who live here in the Bay Area, hopefully we can practice here in Oakland and Richmond and San Francisco, and get folk ready for a different kind of reality.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I've asked this question before in many settings, maybe on this podcast. How do we solve the problem of liberal white people?
So I want to say something that people aren't really thinking about. A lot of times we say to liberal white people, hey, you got to focus on the concerns of people of color because it's bad for them. And I think we need a different entree with liberal white folks. We need to say, hey, race is central to every bad thing that's happened in this country for 50 years, including the massive transfer of wealth to the very
rich. I'm surprised you only went back 50 years, quite frankly.
Yeah, there you go. Well, yeah. 400, but
people can't remember that far. Yeah, back yeah. Up. You gotta start with 50 years first.
Let's
be honest, though. Let's be honest. The right number is 50 years. Because if you go back 50 years ago to the civil rights movement, you have the civil rights movement saying to white folks, racism's immoral. They turn against it. And some respond. But a lot of them sit down and say, hey, you know, I'm looking at my neighborhood. I'm looking at my school. I'm looking at my job. I'm looking at my children. And racism works for me. That can no longer be said in 2017. Because racism just did this to white people. It elected somebody, Donald Trump, handing the country over to billionaires, risking nuclear war, going to renege on climate change. I mean, we might lose our planet. This is a form of white suicide, right? And so we need to say to white folks, racism is bad for you and bad for your children. And now that you're finally serious about racism, join together with people of color, address the racism that harms communities of color. Let's form one unified people and take the country back.
Yes, yes.
No, let him applaud. Come on.
He's like, you're stepping on my applause break.
No, you know, I was waiting because as a comedian, you never get in the way of a crescendo of an applause. The issue that I have with that is that it just, because of the people that I know, it makes me want to vomit that we need to hear that it's going to affect us in order to take action. That's gross. That's wrong.
It's morally wrong. It's pragmatically correct.
I hate pragmatism. I feel like that's what got us here in the first place. One step at a time. I like 9 steps at a time. Maybe it's because I'm 6'4". Pastor McBride, you're down there doing your version of the thinker. you literally had your hand on your chin looking down at the earth going like, I don't know. So...
Yeah. I mean, I agree with both of my comrades on the panel. I mean, I think some work has to be done with white folks. I just know that it can't be done by people of color. And I think that, you know, the greatest test of our white brothers and sisters' commitment to their own self-preservation, if you're invested in the success of this country, hopefully if you're invested in the preservation of the world, is for you to go home to your family who lives in this parallel universe that made sense for them to vote for Donald Trump, and find out why they did, and then figure out a way to help them not do it again. And I don't know that as much as, you know, my collar, my charm, my
your shiny
good
kicks.
Looks, my Air Force Ones. I don't know that that formula would have white folks tell me the truth about why they voted for Donald Trump. But I think you could probably get it out of them. With a lot of love, a lot of patience, that honestly a lot of people of color, I think, just don't have in us. And so I hope that many of us would actually take the risk to go back home to your family and figure out what is the Hansel and Gretel breadcrumbs you have to leave on the ground to get them to come out of the forest and into the 21st century. Because we're not going nowhere.
All right.
I don't think so.
I think it's time. We've talked for a while. We've said a lot of things. It's time to check in with our social media desk to find out who we've angered or who's happy with what we're saying. So it's time we check in with the social media desk. Please give it to our social media desk, Becca Hoekstra and Maya Janelle. What's going on out there in social media land?
So one of the things I asked people was, like, what are you doing, big or small, for the next 4 years? And my favorite one that I got was from @BrightSkySF, flushing my toilet at precisely 12 noon tomorrow. Which I would love to see, like, you know, those graphs of, like, the Super Bowl, and, like, every time there's a commercial, there's, like, that water usage shoots up a lot. So, like, if that was what happened tomorrow, like, that would be pretty funny. Maybe not great for the environment, but, you know, it's pretty much, you know, what are we going to do about that?
Yeah, the environment's about to take it in the face.
Do we even have a committee for that anymore?
Yeah, nice.
And then we got a lot of tweets about drinking. So... Right Night How, @JTrough, monthly donations to ACLU and hoarding alcohol. @JKies gave us a clip to Animal House, just advising everyone to drink heavily. @FeliciaConan, wine, and more wine. So I guess this bar method that Zara's talking about seems to be
That's
working
exactly
for everybody.
What it is, yes.
Yeah. Another thing that... I saw a lot of was just everyone talking about apocalypse preparation, which I don't have up right now, but people were talking about straight up, like, collecting ammo. So that's interesting.
Wait, like, as in people from the Bay Area who listen to this show?
Yeah, like people tweeting us about, hold on, getting ammo.
I just have a feeling they're maybe collecting ammo and forgetting you need the guns. Like, maybe you need to, like, I got a lot of ammo.
Yeah. @CRTUS bought emergency food supply, seed vault, high capacity water filter, ammo.
Wow.
Getting ready. Yeah, a lot of people. @MinaTheMinx stocking canned bottled goods, H2O, my go bag, prepping for Armageddon. @InflatedKarma brushing up on my post apocalyptic skill set. So.
Oh, that's a Dream Hampton talked about that on my other podcast. Yeah, everybody needs a post apocalyptic skill.
Yeah, everyone's
working on my planks.
Working on these. Yeah, because I don't think stand-up comedian, I find that's probably not a good skill for me. Carries heavy things, I think, is going to be my skill in the apocalypse.
Okay. And then we had someone fact-checking a little bit, which I like a lot. I appreciate that. So @KylieSertic, this is on your Cal exit. Careful, a lot of the secessionists in Cal and Texas have ties to Russia.
I don't care at all. Not even a little bit. I'll take a good idea from a bad source. I've said that before. I'm not worried about it. So thanks for that information. Meanwhile,
The great challenge, though, is that if we are indeed the anchor that keeps us from drifting off into the apocalypse because of some of our progressive values, it may actually be an act of radical selfishness to leave our family and loved ones in the toilet. Maybe it's actually better for us to stay and use our wealth and our values and our numbers to accelerate the...
Thanks, Pastor McBride, for bringing logic to my...
Sorry.
No, I appreciate that.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Here's the thing. You're 100% right. It's just I'm an only child, so I practice radical selfishness. Ask my mom, ask my wife, ask my kids.
We all need deliverance. Have no fear. It's all good.
All right. Give it up for my guests, Professor Ian Haney Lopez, Pastor Michael McBride, and Zara Norbosch, everybody. And the Come Out Right Now social media desk. Don't worry. We will have them all back later in the after party and at the end of the show. Now it's time for a little more music. Give it up for Conbrio!
And so high was the one I saw. Hey, good luck, she was rocking. And just dropping was every jaw. I had to get close, cause she was working like a 9 to 5. She took me right by the hand and said, baby, are you ready to fly? See, I'm ready to lift off. Until the sky keeps falling down, now I'm on the lift off.
Donald Trump's nightmare. It's a multiracial band making people feel good. Conbrio! And give it up for the lead singer, Zeke, everybody. Give it up for Zeke. For those of you on the radio, you don't know this, but everybody here, that's what I imagine I look like when I dance, what he was doing. I've heard from other people it's nothing like that. Yes. Conbrio, making me have hope for the future. Again, I'm W. Kamau Bell, and this is Kamau Right Now on KALW. We've heard from Twitter, but let's hear what's happening with the people right here at Laney College in Oakland at the Odell Johnson Theater. Please welcome our audience emissary, Jeremy Dalmas.
Hi. So we got a bunch of cards. I found the theme was that a lot of people were being very proactive and empowering themselves this year, and I took a little bit of energy from that. It was actually made me feel good a little bit. One card we got, the person didn't put their name, but they said, I got my bad coworker fired, so.
I love that. Actually, it doesn't say bad. We edited it for radio, so. it was one of George Carlin's words we can't say. But who got their bad coworker fired? You don't want to say? You don't want to say? All right. Good for you.
Richie Garcia in Oakland said, I finally told my dad I smoke weed.
Oh, yes. We got a press. Some people are divided about that. I guess it depends how it went down. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe he was selling his dad weed, by the way. Me too.
And it's legal now.
Who told their dad they smoke weed? It's you right there? I'll come down there for a second. You told your dad you smoke weed? Hold on a second. I'll be there in a second. It's like old school Donahue style. Come over here. Walk down here. Give it up for Richie, everybody. Give it up for him. So, Richie, I expected you to be, like, 17. Which makes me, I don't know if I feel better, I just noticed. So, I feel like we're probably around the same age.
Yeah.
So we're both like 25. All right. So tell us how it went down.
Well, it just came up because my nephew was talking about it, and he was wondering, he's like, how dangerous is this, you know? So I explained to him, you know, it's like anything else, moderation, it's safe.
Yeah, it's not everything else. Heroin doesn't tend to work in moderation, but weed is like a lot of things. It's in moderation. So that's what you told your nephew?
That's what I told my dad.
That, oh.
Yeah.
So how did your dad respond?
Surprisingly, he was okay with it. We had some big battles when I was in high school. I got drug tested and the whole thing, you know.
Okay. And now, yeah. And so he was like, was he just like, well, whatever. Donald Trump's president, doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Do you think you and your dad will ever have that dad-son, let's get high together thing?
I think about that a lot. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Do you think your dad is the kind of dad who ever smoked weed or did substances?
He did once with my sister, which I found out way later.
Oh, and that didn't go well for him, so he didn't keep smoking?
No, he got real confused.
That's how it starts for everybody. Starts out with confused. That second time, I get it now. Yeah. I get it now. Give it up for Richie and his radical honesty, everybody. What else we got, Jeremy? Who else we got out there?
Oh, yeah. I liked this one because it's not what I expected. Dean Oakland said, I joined Tinder. It has brought me in a connection with lots of intelligent, compassionate, funny, interesting people I would have never met otherwise.
Wow. I think I think you're using Tinder wrong. I'm married, but from what I understand, it's not about conversation. Who is that from?
D in Oakland.
D in Oakland, where are you, D? Do you want to talk about Tinder with me? Oh, in the back, way in the back. Give it up for D in Oakland. Run, Jeremy, run. So D, what made you decide to finally join Tinder?
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was, you know, hot or not.
Wait, you didn't know what you were joining?
Nope.
I guess I've downloaded apps like that before. Like, this app is popular. Oh, good Lord. Why are these people out in front of my house? How did you figure out what it was?
I matched with a few people, and they asked me over to their house.
And you did what?
They asked me to come over to their house.
And then what happened, Dee?
I said, excuse me, no, I'm just here for platonic friendships.
Oh. That probably didn't go over great. But you actually have
instant that? Unmatch, yeah.
What'd you say?
Instant unmatch.
Instant, oh my God. Yeah. So wait, but you have found people on Tinder that you've had platonic friendships with?
Yes. Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you for upsetting the apple cart. And so do you think you'll actually look for romantic entanglements on Tinder?
I've just started dating.
You just what?
I just have finally, as of New Year, started being...
I feel like you're in the witness protection program.
Like a real Tinder person. Like, using it kind of correctly.
Okay, so you started... So you warmed up to the idea of, like, the other thing.
Yeah.
But you started slowly.
We
all need to learn from that. You got to start slowly, everybody. Get up for D, everybody. D. It's actually a great way to find out how crappy people are. We're like, I just want to talk. Goodbye. All right. I don't talk till later. Well, thanks to Jeremy and thanks to all of you out there. Keep those questions and comments coming. We'll get to more of them later on. Remember to use the hashtag Kamau Now. That's K-A-M-E. How do I spell my name? Oh, Lord. That's K-A-M-A-U-N-O-W. Give it up for Jeremy, everybody, and the people we talk to. Now it's time for the show that we call the awkward talk. Sometimes the talks are less awkward than others, but this talk is one of the most important ones we had and one that I think is really important to our community and to the greater nation at whole. We're going to be talking about the Ghost Ship fire that took 36 lives on December 2nd in the Fruitvale District right here in Oakland. We have two people who have personal connections to the Ghost Ship fire. Our first guest is a DJ with the San Francisco Surface Tension Collective. He actually was at the fire. But unfortunately, he survived, but unfortunately lost friends. We appreciate him taking the time to be with us, to be here with us tonight. Please welcome Nihar Bhatt, everybody. Thank you. Also joining us is an Oakland-based writer whose writing has appeared in The Guardian, East Bay Express, Pitchfork, The Wire, and Spin, and he has written several pieces about Ghost Ship. Please welcome Sam Lefebvre, everybody. Thank you, Sam. Thank you. Thank you for being here. This is obviously a very you know, difficult and loaded subject to talk about, and I really, but I, both of you have spoken out about it a lot, so thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
For having us.
Thanks for having us.
So I guess the, you know, I want to try to get to some things that maybe we don't know about this, things that we haven't talked, that we haven't heard people talk about. The thing about this story is it got picked up by national media, and so it became a national media story, and suddenly that's when it starts to get broken up into bite-sized pieces that aren't necessarily even true to the essential nature of the story. So I guess I want to ask both of you, what do you think people are missing about the tragedy that's not being talked about?
I mean, I think we can start with sort of the depth of the loss that happened. You know, 36 people died, you know, from Oakland, and the way that that has impacted the community around them is absolutely devastating. You know, it was such a sudden and intense loss of real leaders, you know, people that many people drew inspiration from, and their family, you know, both biological and you know, chosen family have been grieving, suffering, and that recovery is, you know, it's going to take a long time for the community to recover from that direct grief. Secondly, you know, right in the middle of that recovery, the corresponding, you know, the part of the response was that people started to become even more housing insecure. You know, that what we saw pretty immediately was that there were building inspectors and, you know, sent out to various places that were considered, you know, non-traditional residences, potentially, you know, not up to code residences. That, and people started looking around wondering if they were going to have a place to live right in the middle of this grieving process. And, you know, that people entered the new year and the holiday period extremely fearful for what the future it was going to hold. And that that is still unfolding. And that's not just a phenomenon locally, but actually nationally. People were served with eviction notices. And sometimes landlords directly referencing the fire saying, you know, we can no longer, you know, take the chance.
Oh, wow. So that the ghost ship fire makes landlords in other parts of the country go, you have to get out of here because of what happened there. Oh, wow. Sam, what do you think people aren't getting right about this story or missing? And you've written about it a lot.
Yeah, well, especially with the sort of national media attention that you noticed, the thing that, you know, someone who writes for a national outlet is maybe less likely to tell you in great detail is the extent to which it's created a lot of political will in Oakland around housing, which, of course, everyone was talking about before, but this, you know, sort of exacerbated and, you know, brought more attention to substandard housing in the political arena. And so, for example, on Monday, there's a discussion at City Council that is specifically looking at this thing called the Emergency Tenant Protection Ordinance. And the thing that I think is really strong about this piece of legislation is that it isn't written for a narrow class of artists, even though artists are sort of getting all the attention. It's really written to benefit all the people who live in various kinds of substandard housing, and that's going to include in-laws, it's going to include illegal additions, garages, because right now the truth is that those people don't have tenant protections in Oakland. And so one of the things that this legislation would do if enacted is it would extend tenant protections to those people.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's something positive that's coming out of this. Because I think some of the things I've read about this, and I've seen you both talk about this a little bit, the idea that, like, there is a sense from some people in Oakland and in Fruitvale that maybe the attention is too much on the artists and not on the people in those neighborhoods who have been living there the whole time, you know. And how do you respond to that, and what do you think about that idea?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, the truth is that a lot of these sort of artist warehouse residences and venues and kind of underground cultural centers, you know, they're insular and they're secretive. And part of the reason they are that way is because maybe what they're doing is illegal and they don't want attention. But the consequence of that is that they often silo themselves from the community that surrounds them. So you have a warehouse out in Fruitvale, and after this tragedy, you know, the news has reported that, you know, a lot of their neighbors, they didn't know them. They didn't know their neighbors. People in that neighborhood, a lot of them didn't know that anyone lived there. And to me, like, that's a really troubling distressing detail. Like, I just find that tremendously sad. And I think that artists have a responsibility not to reenact that dynamic in the wake of the fire by not talking about the flatlands in Oakland that surround these warehouses, but by talking about communities in Oakland in a more holistic way.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd just like to add that I think the impression of artists as sort of a monolithic community within Oakland is, I think it doesn't really speak to the actual complexity of, you know, what we might call artists or actually who's affected by this in general. You know, the fact is that, you know, that these tactics of sort of using code violations or looking the other way until there's a need to sort of evict tenants for the sake of relocation and turning things over for developers is something that's been going on for a long time. It happened before the fire, and after the fire, that dynamic is just even more intense, that much more intense. And that affects people of color in Oakland, and some of the communities being affected immediately after the fire, you know, were run by people of color, Quilombo, for example. And I think it just speaks to the fact that, you know, artists, that, you know, people talk about Libby Schaff and her support for the artist community, but that doesn't necessarily speak for everyone who is affected by this fire and or the artists, you know, and not all artists are the same, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And the other question is, I've seen a lot of different like fundraising applications and like GoFundMes to raise money for the people affected by the fire. And a part of me thinks, that's great. We have this thing now where when things happen, people immediately go to these locations to give money to support, and I'm not questioning the validity of them. But sometimes I wonder, and I've seen other people talk about this, like, it's sort of, there are, like, tenants' rights organizations that exist, like Causa Justa, that, you know, could use the money all year round. Do you ever feel like there's a sense of, like, and I'm not saying the people affected by the fire, but do you understand what I'm saying? Like, that the funds sort of, like, run to one area and yet sort of can easily ignore other areas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you make an excellent point. I mean, that was why, you know, as a journalist, like the first few stories that I wrote about this, I didn't just talk to people who were trying to fundraise to meet the immediate needs of, you know, maybe some of people who, artists who were facing crackdowns or whatnot. I also went out and I talked to the Anti-Eviction Mapping Project. I talked to Casa Justa. I talked to, you know, Fabiana Rodriguez at the Eastside Arts Alliance, you know, like...
Fabiana!
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's essential that we sort of wield the attention that Oakland has right now on a national level and, you know, use it to lift up not only the Red Cross's efforts or Gray Area Foundation for the Arts efforts, but the efforts of the historic social justice organizers and the historic nonprofits who've been advocating for this community 4 years, way before the fire.
Well, I want to thank you. Give it up. I want to thank you for coming out tonight. This is a difficult thing to talk about. I know you were at the fire. We want to bring you back later in the after party to talk more about these issues, but please give it up for Nihar Bhatt and Sam LaFave, everybody. Thank you for coming. Really appreciate it. All right, everybody, we are almost out of time, but I'm going to bring back, please welcome back the guest panel, Pastor Mike, Ian Haney Lopez, and Zara Norbosch, everybody. Bring them back. And Con Brio! So we joke about this subject a lot in the Bay Area, but I want to ask you all, since you're here, because there's a thing we need, as we move forward into the fight, whatever you call it, the resistance, as we move forward to actually confront the things that are going to happen in this country, what are you all doing for self-care? I'll start with you, Pastor Mike.
Well, three quick things. I am definitely engaging in spiritual practices and disciplines that fortify my soul and my mind and my heart, so I don't become that which I'm actually fighting against. Second thing is I definitely believe you got to read more books so you can actually know what authoritarian and fascism really is and not what Facebook says it is. And the third thing, listen to black women. 96% of them voted against this option. I don't know. They're not infallible. I don't know, but they figured something out.
Well, you know what? I asked him for one thing. He gave me three things. So he took up your time, everybody. Thank you for watching, listening to Come Out Right Now. The thing I do for self-care is sugar. So tonight, I want to give some sugar to everybody in the audience. Everybody gets a donut. You get a donut. You get a donut. Bring out the donuts!
And because it's the Bay Area. And that does it for Come Out Right Now here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco. As it happens is next, news and information from a Canadian perspective. The time is 8 o'clock.
Hello, I'm Helen Mann.
And I'm Chris.